Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Rurink, Samantha Schreiber. A little later, we're going to have Garrett Saldano. He is a Republican gubernatorial candidate joining us. Also, Chris Marchione. He is a political consultant out of Southeast Michigan. He's going to break down some of the congressional races there. But first, John, I thought it would be helpful for our listeners to listen to some of the candidates' responses during the Republican debate that MERS co-sponsored with the Livingston County Republican Party last Thursday. There were a couple questions that we wanted to make sure that we got to. Let's listen to the questions and the responses from the candidate before listening to Mr. Saldano.
The first question goes to all of the candidates. Presuming Roe versus Wade is overturned, and the Michigan State Supreme Court overturns Michigan's 1931 abortion ban per Governor Whitmer's request, what type of abortion law would you like to see signed into law to protect life in Michigan?
I am a pro-life candidate. Life is very important to me. The law that we have now is a good law. We need to protect life in this state. It is very important to me that we are honest with young women about the joy of motherhood, that we are supportive of young women who are having a family and have the opportunity to experience the joy of having a baby. We have to stop this lie that it's not a baby. I have personal experience with this. My own personal experience is that when I was 18 weeks pregnant with my second baby, we lost her. And we gave birth to a little girl who was perfect. She had perfect little lips, perfect little fingers and toes, perfect little arms and legs, and you can't tell me that that's not a child, and you can't tell me that that's not a life worth living. And my beautiful baby girl may not be with me anymore, but I get to tell her story to every young woman out there who is scared that she won't have opportunity because of that baby, because I'm running for governor, and I have four daughters.
Thank you. Mr. Rinke?
Good evening. I'm pro-life. My position is the same as Donald Trump, both Bushes, and Ronald Reagan. I believe in pro-life with exceptions, rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And Michigan's law is appropriate, and the law that I would sign into effect is appropriate and respectful for Michigan and all her residents.
Mr. Kelly?
My wife and I have six children with each other, so we have a big nuclear family, and we are pro-life. Should the law from 1931 be overturned by the Michigan Supreme Court, I would sign a law that banned all abortions, except for if the mother's life was being threatened. I believe that it's important that we also address the culture component that comes along with this. We see Justice Kavanaugh as being threatened by the far-left radicals because they continue to want to push this lie that they were fed that it's a right for a woman to have an abortion. It's absolutely not a right. A new life, a new body, and a brand new strand of DNA starts at conception. We need to be very vocal about this. We need to make sure that as Republicans, we stand on the truth and we stand on the side of God, because I'll tell you what, the Democrats, they will fight for their position no matter what. And they are pro-abortion, and they are unapologetic about it. If Republicans don't get it together and become unapologetically about being pro-life, we're going to continue to lose out. It's extremely important that we get the right candidates in all of these different offices that are willing to fight the battle in order to bring the pro-life culture back to the state of Michigan and the United States of America.
Mr. Perry?
I'm going to stand up because it is so large a room. The reality is that I am pro-life, and I have to agree with Ryan. I have to agree with Tudor. Life begins at conception. And unless the mother's life is at risk, I cannot accept abortion. I have three wonderful kids. They're probably the greatest joy in my life. I have the most perfect life on the planet. I have a wife who would only vote for someone if they were pro-life, period. I have probably the best wife on the planet. And when you have a life where you see that the kids bring so much joy to your life, you realize that there is nothing in this world that gives you the joy you get from your kids. Nothing on this planet. That is why I am running for governor. I think we're going south. I think we're going in the wrong direction in so many ways, but particularly morally. We have to say, what is really important in life? And when you get right down to it, isn't family and your children the single most important thing on the planet? Don't we love our children? Who loves our children more than the parents? No one. They're going to shut me up, but I want to tell you, I love being here, and I love America, and I sure love our kids.
Mr. Brown.
Good evening, Livingston County. It's great to be here. We got a great governor's race ahead of us. I'm proudly pro-life, pro-life Catholic, and I remember going to... Thank you very much. Let me start that again, Megan. So I am proudly pro-life, pro-life Catholic. I remember going to St. Patrick's Church, and there was a full pew in front of us with 10 children in it, and we had 4 children in my family. I am pro-life with exceptions. I've seen some terrible things in my state police career with incest and rape, and that's my only exceptions. But I welcome this debate if Roe v. Wade is returned to the states. I welcome the debate in every state in this nation to protect the unborn across the state of Michigan, because the Republican Party and the people in this room are on the high ground of that argument all across this nation. So I will be standing there with you on the high ground to protect life in the state of Michigan. So thank you very much.
Mr. Rebrandt.
For 35 years, I've been a pastor supporting life because in Psalm 139, the scriptures tell us that God intricately wove us in our mother's womb and that life begins at conception. People want to know why I believe that, and the answer is really simple. It comes down to 2 words, who says so, and it's not anything else other than the very word of God that tells us that life begins at conception. It's that stand, my friends, that Father Frank Pavone from Priests for Life has endorsed me as his candidate for Michigan governor. I will also share with you that I would sign any law that outlaws abortion because I am convinced that it's murder, it's taking the life of a child, and we need to call it what it is. And if we don't have the courage to do that, I'm not sure we should be governor. And so I share that with you because as I look at the opportunities that are before us as a state, we have some incredible laws on the books right now, the MCL 750.14, I believe, that states that abortion is illegal in every county in our state. But I did want to say that as a pastor, 2 things. I have talked with women who have had an abortion, and I've talked with women who were considering abortion. All of the women who were considering abortion that did not have an abortion never regretted the fact that they brought their baby into the world. Thank you.
Mr. Solidano.
Hey, look, I'm 100% unapologetically pro-life. My mom was adopted, and if her birth mother could have an adoption or could have had an abortion, I wouldn't be here, and I know the progressive left wishes that would have happened. As your next governor, we're not going to send our taxpaying dollars to Planned Parenthood, folks. We need to send our taxpaying dollars to adoption centers, crisis, pregnancy centers, so these mothers know that their baby is loved, that there's great people behind them. We all know that Whitmer is an extremist on abortion. I mean, look what she just said a couple weeks ago, saying that she would do everything in her power to make sure that she goes against if Roe versus Wade gets overturned. That's why we need strength now, and we need somebody to stand up, and I will always stand up. Because if you look at our species, where in the history of our species did we ever, ever sacrifice the child for the act of the mother? Never have we done that, and we shouldn't be doing it now. So we must stand up for the ones who can't stand up for themselves, and we must continue to stand up for pro-life folks.
Mr. Markey.
Look, I'm like every other Republican up here. I'm unapologetically pro-life. But I think it's important for you guys to know a little bit about me, where I come from. So I raised my kids here in Michigan. I'm from Michigan. I built businesses in Michigan. My wife and I together employ people across the state, across the nation. So when I'm governor, what we're going to do is, number one, we're going to get CRT out of our schools. It's done with critical race theory. Number two, we're going to support the police. What a novel idea. Three, we're done with mandates, period. And four, as you'll see on my bus, we're going to make Michigan number one. See, people tell you that it's a crazy idea, Mike, that Michigan could lead the world, lead the nation in employment. I disagree. It's absolutely not true. See, 50 years ago, the U.S. led the world in employment, and Michigan, our state, our people, our factories led the U.S. in manufacturing. We've been there before, and we can go back there if we have the right leadership, the right vision. So tonight you're going to hear from a lot of people who talk about being a leader, a business leader, and they've got a proven track record. But what you need to understand is that I'm a disruptor. I've created things from nothing, taken risks that others haven't done. I've been able to get people to follow a lead, which is very important. Other people just say, well, they inherited a business, a successful business, and they just didn't screw it up. So you need a leader who can change things. If Michigan's on the right path, then by all means, pick somebody who won't screw it up. If you think,
thank
though,
you, Mr. Markey.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Markey. To be clear here, before we go on to our next question, I'm a little confused yet on some of the positions. Ms. Dixon, would you sign an abortion law that contained exceptions? What is your preference? Would you like to see exceptions in a law?
My exception is life of the mother.
Okay. All right. And then, Mr. Rebant, do you support a law that has exceptions? Would you prefer to see one that doesn't have exceptions?
I would not sign a law that has exceptions. When it comes to the life of the mother, it's not an abortion being ripped from a woman's body. It would be life for a life.
All right, Mr. Saldano, do you support, what kind of law would you like to see? With exceptions, without exceptions?
Life of the mother.
Okay, and Mr. Markey, what kind of exceptions, if any?
Life of the mother, race, rape, and incest.
Thank you, sir.
Governor.
I guess he still runs from the sidelines. He's not running from the front or leading from the front. Yes.
All right. Next yes or no question, starting with Ms. Dixon. Yes or no, do you believe Donald Trump legitimately won the 2020 election in Michigan?
Yes.
Mr. Rinke, did Donald Trump legitimately win the 2020 election in Michigan?
Why do you have to answer yes or no?
I'm not going to answer that yes or no.
Okay.
It's not right.
All right. Mr. Kelly.
From watching 20,000 Mules, we know that there was significant amount of fraud and foul play. And should we take a look at the investigation and find the truth? I believe absolutely yes, Donald Trump would have won Michigan's 2020 election.
Mr. Johnson.
We know that there was incredible fraud because of the fact that...
Closer to the mic, please, sir.
72%.
We know there was incredible fraud. 72% of the precincts did not match. You know that for a fact. And we know that with all that's going on, that we would have to have detail on it. The reality of the matter is that we need data to find out, and we need that investigation.
Yes, sir.
How would you, honestly, guys, how would you in a million years, without the data, know the exact voter count?
All right, thank you, sir.
I am not a Democrat.
Thank you, thank you. We're going to move on
please,
now. Captain
audience.
Brown. Captain Brown, please, sir. Captain Brown. Captain Brown.
I've lost track of your question. Can you say
it
again?
Do you believe Donald Trump legitimately won the 2020 election in Michigan?
I'm already on record on this, Michigan. No, and we got a bunch of people on stage here flopping around like fish on a dock.
All right. Mr. Rebrandt, did Donald Trump win the 2020 election in Michigan?
Yes, he did.
Mr.
I
Saldano.
Saw the fraud.
Mr. Saldano.
President Trump is still my president, yes.
Michael Markey, sir.
You asked for yes or no, no explanation, no.
Join us now on the podcast is gubernatorial candidate Garrett Saldano. He is from Kalamazoo County, in particular, the good city of Portage. Is that right, sir?
Just next door to Portage, Mattawan, Michigan, actually.
Mattawan, all right. And you're a chiropractor by trade. Are you still doing patients? Are you still seeing patients, or what's going on with that?
No, unfortunately, I haven't been in practice for over a year. Obviously, when you're running for governor, it's a seven day per week gig. So I have a great associate doctor who's holding down the fort.
Jeez, that's got to be kind of hard, isn't it?
It's really hard, actually. There's been a lot of sacrifice, obviously, on our end with our family. You know, I have two young boys, a 14 and a 12-year-old. They need dad at home, and I'm pretty active on the campaign trail. But we all know what we're fighting for, and we know how important this is, and we know what's at stake. That's for sure.
I'm curious what your reaction was when you first heard about the signature issues of the candidates, the other candidates on the ballot or that are running for the primary.
You know, I was shocked. You know, that's the number one rule, right? As a campaign consultant, is to get your candidate on the ballot. And that's one thing that we're really blessed with, is we have a movement of unbelievable people that have been fighting side by side with me ever since the beginning, that have obviously been there through the Unlock Michigan petition. So I wouldn't say that we were experts at gathering signatures, but we knew what to expect. We knew what we had to do. And the good thing is about the Unlock Michigan campaign, that was in the summer. And it's easy to collect signatures out in the summer when it's warm. But when it comes winter time in Michigan and everybody kind of hunkers down, it's a lot more challenging to get those signatures. But we were blessed enough to start in July, and I think we went well over 20,000 by January. But we just need to get that kind of off our backpack of responsibility and just kind of move forward. That's why we handed them in so early, just to check mark and let's move on. But a little shocked with the citizen or with the petitions, because you know what? If you have to be able to do that, you have to get on the ballot. And if you can't inspire people to sign your petition to get you on the ballot, how are you going to run the state? And all of our signatures were collected 100% grassroots, not one paid circulator, which meant too that we had control. We were analyzing everything. We weren't using an outside source to get those signatures done. So shocking, yes, but we're going to see what the ruling is at the end of the month and see who's really officially on the ballot, because it looks like two of them may not be.
Have you noticed an uptick in fundraising since this whole situation arose?
On our end, yeah. We really, over the last, I mean, to be honest with you, ever since the debate, it's increased quite dramatically now that people are starting to see what we're going to bring to the race. And so I really feel that momentum is going to continue to build. My phone's been blowing up the last 48 hours with people who want to do fundraisers and want to get involved. And now it's starting to have a ripple effect in other parts of the country, because people are seeing what's going on in the state of Michigan and how someone like me is able to get so much ground done in such a short amount of time.
You know, I know that when you started off, you were the anti-establishment candidate, and you were, you know, very critical of some of the early endorsements and support that James Craig was getting early on in the race. Now here we are. James Craig has lost a lot of his endorsements. Christina Caramo, Matt DiPerno, who got a lot of their traction from the grassroots, won their endorsement conventions. How would you describe the state of today's Michigan Republican Party and the new dynamics of it?
Well, I think more and more people are engaged more than ever. And that's why you're not going to be able to buy this race just with your own money. I really feel that you have to get out there and have boots on the ground and get in front of the voters and talk to them and be with them. But the Michigan Republican Party, there's some stuff going on, obviously, behind the scenes. And I really feel that some lines have been drawn in the sand. But that's one thing that we're learning, is this movement of people out there is pretty dramatic and pretty engaged and pretty passionate. And the power is going to come back to the people, and the old guard, you know, they need to adapt and improvise and overcome with what's coming. And hopefully they do that, because we all know and can agree that after the primary, it's all about unity. We have to unify behind whoever wins the primary in any race. And it's all hands on deck as we go after Governor Whitmer and her pretty big war chest that she's accumulating.
So what is your personal definition of a rhino?
Well, to my personal Republican name only, right? So, you know, I've dealt with a lot of career politicians, silver spoon politicians that I call them. And they talk a big game, but when it comes down to it, they're not backing with what they're saying, and they're not standing up. And that's one of the reasons why I got involved in this evil game called politics, because in the beginning, when this all went down, I was looking around wondering, you know, where's our elected officials? Where are these people in positions of authority or positions of power to stand up against this? Because what's going on right now is not right. And nobody was. And that's why I said during the debate, it's time for ordinary people to do extraordinary things. And that's what we've been able to do, is create a movement literally overnight of hundreds of thousands of very passionate people. And as the leader of this movement, my job was to direct this energy into a force to be reckoned with and a force to get things done to inspire change in our state. And I'm proud to say we have been doing that for 2 years straight.
So with that definition of a rhino, are there any Republican gubernatorial candidates in this field that you would say are rhinos?
Yeah, I think we saw who's who during the debate with some of the questions that they answered regarding election integrity and some other answers. So I really feel half that field lost their chances of even participating in the race, to be honest with you. And that's kind of like the chatter right now on social media, what I'm hearing. But there's some good viable candidates. And you know what? Every single one of them have my respect for running and throwing their hat in the ring. But again, you know, everyone knows that Governor Whitmer is vulnerable. Ever since what she did to our children in November 2020 and locked us down at 25% capacity, when Indiana, Ohio, and Wisconsin were pretty much fully open, that made her vulnerable. And so a lot of people decided, like, oh, I can beat her. But where were you before that? You know, we had one of the candidates say that he was going to be a disruptor. We need a disruptor. And I was like, we don't need a disruptor. We need leadership. Because I would have loved that mentality 2 years ago as a disruptor. If you would have joined our movement and circulated the Unlock Michigan petition and actually attend one of our protests and rallies, where it wasn't hundreds, guys and girls, it was thousands of people were showing up to these things. And where was he when we were trying to get these kids back to high school athletics and try to get these kids back to in-person learning? I haven't seen hardly any of those other candidates at any of these functions over the last 2 years. And so, to me, it's just, I'm going to call it how I see it. And if you haven't been around fighting since the beginning, you're not going to get my voter support. And that's in any level of office.
Would you call Perry Johnson a rhino?
I don't know Perry well enough to have a opinion on him right now. He's new to the race. I mean, he spent over, what, $3.5 million last month on commercials alone. Nobody even knew who the guy was until we start seeing the quality guru come up on the commercials. But again, he's got a lot of ground to make up. And I think a lot of people are just kind of turned off with these self-funders trying to just buy their way into it. And like I said, if any one of these people on stage would have stood up from the beginning, I wouldn't have had to. I'd be following them. If someone would have stood up and went against these lockdowns and everything else, I wouldn't have ran, guys. I wouldn't have started that movement. I'd be getting behind that person, and they didn't. And so, like me and many others out there, there's a lot of people who have lost faith in these elected officials and lost faith in government. And so I think that's one of my biggest responsibilities as the leader and as Michigan's next governor, is restore that faith in government so people can understand they can trust again. And for that to happen, we need someone like me in there that's going to lead, that's going to take the arrows on both sides. But we need truth and transparency now. And that's why we have to get Sunshine Plan 2.0. And we need the legislature to write the bill, what they wrote this past week on the ballot or whatever. It's not good enough. We demand better.
I'm just trying to nail down a name. What about James Craig? Is he a rhino?
James Craig. Here's the questions that I have concern with James Craig. Is a couple of things. Is number one, you enforce the lockdowns. And I get it. You know, as a police officer, he said the reason he enforced the lockdowns was because he was appointed by the mayor. Well, that doesn't sit well with me because as a police officer, because I went to the police academy, you take an oath to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States. And I really feel as Americans, we all inherit that oath as Americans. And if you come over here legally, you also inherit that oath to defend and protect the Constitution. So you don't get a get out of jail free card because you're appointed by the mayor. Because, yeah, it was scary to stand up in the beginning. It was very unpopular to do so. But that's when we need somebody with a backbone who's really willing to lead from the front and put himself out there to do what's right according to the people. And if he would have did that, he might have got fired. He might have got fired. But he would be our next governor because I wouldn't be running. I'd be supporting him.
Isn't it fair to say, though, that law enforcement had to enforce those orders under the Constitution.
No.
Protecting the Constitution, you have to recognize that in order to challenge the constitutionality of an official act, you've got to go through the courts. That's the mechanism, right?
Yep, you do. But you also, that's the ultimate contract, and you could have stood up and did it. Because there's been police officers throughout even Canada and the U.S. that were standing up against it. You know, constitutional sheriffs that we refused to enforce those lockdowns. And so that's why the power is always at the local level. So again, hey, we always have to defend and protect the Constitution. I've been very vocal about this from the very beginning. Your constitutional freedoms, your sacred values, your citizens' rights should never be infringed upon, regardless of a pandemic. You know, I believe this, and I truly do. If you give just the people the truth, not a narrative, not a political narrative, you just give the people the truth and transparency, we'll figure it out. And when the governor was denying FOIA requests to the executive branch in during COVID until the end of June, and she was denying the hospital data to the legislature, if you guys remember that, our movement was the driving force to get a resolution through the legislature to demand the hospital data. Why were you not revealing that? Because I've been tracking the hospital data ever since the beginning. I haven't been talking a lot about this, but it's worse now than it's ever been.
As far as what, transparency?
As far as hospital capacity, because you remember from the very beginning, we didn't want to overwhelm the hospital system. We want to flatten the curve. Well, 2 weeks is going on 2 years now. And so it's just not adding up. And so nobody's talking about those types of things, and I've been involved with it. And that's why as Michigan's next governor, or the primary candidate, I guess you could say, we got to hold her accountable. You're not going to beat Governor Whitmer on stage talking about who can fix the gosh darn roads better. It's accountability time. And I've been holding her accountable ever since the beginning. And just like I said during the debate, I'm the only one on that stage who has beaten her, who took away her powers. And I'm 1-0. And I plan on being 2-0 in November.
Sam?
So, you know, obviously Unlock Michigan Part 1 was, you know, successful. It got approved by the legislature. And, you know, now it seems a lot of times when it comes to COVID-related mandates, it's decided by, you know, an individual business. So my question is, where is the relevancy of still running off of a no more mandate campaign, as we are kind of in a much more different spot with the pandemic than we were several months ago?
Absolutely. It's evolved, right? And so that's why we just want to make sure that we never, ever do the definition of insanity again. And that's why that 45 law had to come off the books. So before I go into the mandate question, you have to remember with the 1945 law, it got held up in the court systems for a year. However, the Michigan Supreme Court ruled in favor of the legislature and said that every executive order that she did at the end of April was unconstitutional. Well, Dana Nessel, I think I read a couple months ago, asked the state Supreme Court to overrule that ruling. So that's interesting on election year that they're trying to overrule the ruling of her executive orders being unconstitutional. So if we, the people, wouldn't have got that 1945 law off the books, that law would still be there for future governors to abuse. And so, again, if you look what's happening with Roe versus Wade right now, right? And if that gets overturned, Governor Whitmer is an extremist on abortion. And she said she's not going to follow that law. And if that 1945 law would have still been on the books, the Emergency Powers Act, she's smart. She probably would have found a way to utilize that again to rule with an iron fist. And so with the conversation, with the mandates, it is evolving. But then for the big three just reinstituted mask mandates in their factories, I think, over the weekend, if I read correct. And again, on day one, mask mandates will be illegal. Now, look. You have every right as an employer, because we don't want government in our everyday lives. We don't want government in our businesses and telling us what we can and can't do, right? So if an employer wants to have some type of policy, they have every right to have a policy, but the employee also has rights. So we should be able to have waivers that would allow them not to have these masks or actually have the vaccine. And that's a medical waiver. That can be a religious waiver. And what I'm going to add to that is a philosophical waiver, because as an American, you don't have a right to know my religion. As an American, you don't get to ask me about my medical history. So we're going to add that philosophical waiver on there to give the employee their rights too.
Something that we've been covering is the possibility of the state Senate turning blue and having a Democratic majority. And, you know, this brings me to my next question. Do you feel that you would be able to work effectively and very well collaboratively with a Democratic state Senate?
We have to. That's how our government works. You're not always going to have everyone on your side. And that's why I've been from the very beginning talking about unity.
And I just been getting attacked for making those statements on how I'm willing to have deep conversations from a variety of different people and backgrounds and experiences to move not only our state forward, but our country forward. I mean, I think we're all sick and tired of the division that's going on right now. We have to get away from this fringe left and fringe right mentality. We have to have conversations again. Now, look, you're not going to change my belief system on the Second Amendment. You're not going to change my belief system on the Constitution or pro-life. But I always share this story. When we first announced, we had a woman get a hold of me online. She said, I'm pro-choice. And I said, well, nice to meet you. She's like, you'll have conversation with me. I said, absolutely. Man, she drove 2.5 hours to my next meet and greet. And she came in there fired up. And she introduced herself. And she's like, I'm pro-choice. And I said, well, I'm pro-life. Nice to meet you. We had a 35-minute conversation. You think I changed her belief? Nope. She didn't change mine. After that conversation, she gave me a big old hug. She's like, I never voted for a Republican before, but I'm voting for you. Never donated to a campaign, but I'm donating to yours. We have to get away from the division. We have to have unity now. And you don't destroy a country, folks, by bringing in a military with boots on the ground, aircraft carriers, tanks. You do it from within. You do it with infighting. You do it with division. United we stand, divided we fall. That statement has never meant more true than it does right now. I mean, we have to unite now. And I'm the candidate who, yeah, I can have conversation. And we're going to have some really deep conversations and some very difficult conversations, but they need to have. So, yeah, I can work with people.
You were in Texas this weekend. What were you doing there?
So there is a big chiropractic convention down there called Max Living. And they invited me to come down and speak to their group. And we flew down there, spoke to them, and everybody's very excited right now. And that's the ripple effect that our movement is creating. And that's my job as the leader of this thing, is to inspire other states to say, holy cow, here's a guy that's just an ordinary human being to decide to do something. And he's being successful at it. And that's the ripple effect that I want to create throughout our country.
You raised a little bit of money at that thing too, didn't you?
We raised a good chunk of change.
All right.
And you'll know that amount on July when we announce it.
All right. When do you think you're going to be able to go up on television, sir?
We're ready right now. We have accumulated a war chest, but we're just strategically looking at it. But it's going to be soon.
And then the other thing I wanted to ask you about, I got some response back from the debate. And there was concern that you didn't answer the question regarding whether you thought Trump had won the 2020 election legitimately. Do you think Trump won, yes or no?
Yes, and here's why.
Okay, so it was a yes.
Yeah, and here's why. And this is why I've been always for a full forensic audit, because we just want to be told the truth. And by them not doing the full forensic audit, I know there's been superficial ones and everything else, especially with the documentary 2000 Mules that came out. Here's what we need to understand, we need to find out. There's fraud in every election. We know that. How much was there? And did it sway a presidential election? And I think every Michigander, every American, I think this is a bipartisan issue, is we want to make sure and understand and know that our vote counts. And so we have to look at the integrity systems. We have to look at unemployment agency. We have to look at all these departments, guys. And we have to audit things because we need to improve upon them. But after watching those documentaries, yeah, there was fraud. And they got video evidence. And I hope they investigate it, because I think everybody needs to know the truth. Whether it did or did not sway the presidential election in the state of Michigan, because the evidence is there, but I don't know if they're going to push it further, but I don't know. They need to.
Did you read the Senate Republican review of the election and the findings that Ed McGroom found, and he didn't find any fraud?
It was a superficial audit. It wasn't deep. They didn't really go into like the Antrim things, and they didn't go through what's going on with 2000 Mules, with the ballot harvesting, and the mass mailings of absentee ballot applications. Those are the things where fraud can occur. And now, like watching that documentary and seeing that they actually were doing it. Now, we don't know whether those votes were for Biden or Trump, right? Why don't we investigate those people, bring them in, and let's find out what happened? And that's what the people deserve to know. And again, that's a bipartisan issue. One thing that I do not like going around the state of Michigan is people actually tell me I'm not voting because it's not going to count. That is the worst thing for our republic for that to happen. People should know and understand that their vote counts. And so I just believe in audits, period. Let's look at things and let's improve upon them.
So who does this audit in a perfect world?
Well, one of the excuses that we heard from the legislature is they didn't have the financing, right? That it would just be too much money. And they could have had that publicly financed. There are so many people that want to get this done. You can bring it up to the private sector and the companies that would sure would do it. But I think we need to do it. But you look at this common sense wise, the legislature actually did their job and they've passed a lot of bills to make our elections better. But Governor Whitmer has vetoed every single one of them. And so we have the bills ready. And to me, it's just common sense. I'll, you know, elaborate on the voter ID, stop the ballot harvesting, stopping the mailings of the absentee ballot applications. You know, when we're seeing that dead people are voting or people are getting 9 or 10 ballots delivered to their address because of previous owners, that's not right. And that's not integrous. And those are the things we need to stop because, like I said, bipartisan. Every person should know and believe that their vote is integrous and it's going to count.
Last question here. We got to let you go. The debate last Thursday, you told me afterwards you believed you won, but we didn't have the perceived front runner in the poll there, James Craig. What did you think about him not being there, and he has yet to commit to the one in Traverse City?
James Craig has a lot of questions that he needs to answer. And the more that he's running from the sidelines, it's not leading from the front. You know what? Even if he would have just came out in the beginning, just told the truth and say, yeah, just like Governor DeSantis, he locked down in the beginning. And then he said, never will happen again. That's truth and transparency. So if you made mistakes in the past, we all have. Those who are free of sin cast the first stone. But you need to come out and own up to them. You know, and his answer to why he stopped enforcing the mask or the mandates was because the Michigan State Police didn't ticket people at the rally they had the Capitol. That's not leading from the front. That's waiting in the background. And then the kind of the nail in the coffin, and I feel his campaign, is when they chased out Republican poll watchers at the TCF Center. A lot of conservatives are very unhappy about that, and they want answers. And he needs to come out there and answer them. And by him just being, you know, having some face recognition and getting on Fox News every week and talking about the police, you know, you're going to have to do more. That might have worked in the past, but not anymore. He's got to come out and he's got to debate, and people have to hear his answers to a variety of different things. You're not going to be running from the basement like Biden and winning this thing. That's for sure.
Garrett Saldano, he is a Republican candidate from Mattawan. I appreciate you taking some time and speaking with us here on the podcast.
I appreciate you guys. God bless.
What was your lead out of that interview with Garrett Saldano, John?
The lead I would take is that he is getting ready to go on television. Because I think if he can get on television, and if James Craig is out and Tudor Dixon is out, if Perry Johnson's out or not, Saldano has to be on television in order to win this primary.
Sam, what's your lead out of that interview?
And I definitely thought it was interesting how he responded to my question about a potential Democratic Senate majority and this call for unity, because obviously I think that's going to be a mechanism that will be utilized when we're in general election season. So that was definitely what I would consider a distinct sneak peek of how do you appeal to the moderate independent voter in this race. But at the same time, I kind of have to echo off of John. You know, when are we going to start seeing more TV ads and not just a TV arena that's so far dominated by Perry Johnson and Kevin Rinke?
I did think the whole unity question or response was interesting, because as he was talking about the woman who is pro-choice supporting him after a long conversation, you know, his unity message sounds compelling. And if he can get some TV airtime and is able to share that to a broader audience, it could have a lot of appeal. It's something that maybe folks are thinking about, but particularly since Perry Johnson's ads, while they have boosted his name ID, that quality guru thing, I think, is something he's going to put back in the closet, John.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily had much sex appeal, but I certainly think the unity message is something Garrett's going to want to use if he wins the primary. He's going to have to do that kind of messaging in order to bring himself in the center of the arena enough to get enough independent votes. I think he'd carry the Republican Party without too much difficulty, but it's going to become a battle of the independents. And is he too conservative for the bulk of the state or not?
Well, he was very clear on his response that, yes, Donald Trump did win the election. So if there was any ambiguity behind that, he cleared that up.
He wasn't one of those fish flopping on the dock, right?
As Michael Brown would say. You know, I wished he was going to name names, though, as to who was a rhino. I was trying to get at names.
you could almost see him, for those who were listening, you could in the Zoom screen, you could almost see him tempted to, but he didn't.
He was very tempted. He was very tempted, that's for sure.
Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be.
All right, we're joined now by Chris Marchione. He is a political consultant in Southeast Michigan, been doing politics for about 20 years now, mostly on the Democratic side. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Well, we've got three congressional races in Southeast Michigan I wanted to get your opinion on. Folks are really interested in the 11th District with Andy Levin and Haley Stevens going against each other. Did Andy Levin make a mistake running in that 11th as opposed to running in that 10th district where he could have faced off against John James?
You know, that seems to be the narrative that people are pushing, that Andy made a mistake or that Andy abandoned the 10th. And the thing nobody has said is Andy Levin wants to represent where he lives. I mean, they're like, to me, this is like the most non-controversial district switch ever. Like, he lives in West Bloomfield. His family and their roots, both politically and otherwise, go back how many years? I mean, it makes perfect sense for him to run there. And I don't think the threat of John James really did much to change his mind. I mean, remember, popular people don't lose twice in a row. And there's also, let's be honest, Macomb County. You know, I mean, I've been working in Macomb County. I've been lived here most of my life, you know, and working in Macomb County politics, it ages you in dog years.
So what if Haley Stevens had stayed put? Because she did live in the 10th district. She decided not to run in that district. How do you think she would have done in the 10th?
I think either one of them would have been strong candidates here. You know, I mean, Andy is obviously the more progressive of the two, but he is progressive on the things that Macomb County wants you to be progressive on.
Which are labor?
Yeah, labor issues. You know, and Haley is one of the hardest workers I've ever seen. You know, you put a call list in front of Haley, she'll get you something out of it.
So who do you give the odds to then?
I honestly don't know. I really don't. It's because, you know, I mean, a month ago, 2 months ago, you would have said Haley. But now, you know, Andy's support starting to pop up now. You know, he's going to have a lot of boots on the ground through labor. You know, his money fundraising isn't going to be an issue for either one of them. So I really couldn't make a call right now.
Where is Haley getting her support from?
Haley supports, you know, she's built great relationships with the activists and donors in Oakland County. AIPAC coming in is certainly a boost. You know, I mean, God only knows what they're going to spend. You know, at the time before redistricting and then when the lines first came out and Haley was in the 10th, you know, that was a thing. Like, she can raise the money. She can be competitive anywhere. And like I said, she connects very well with people.
Well, let's move over to the district then that we were just talking about, the 10th district, where we have a flood of candidates, and you are working in this district. For full disclosure, what are you doing in that district right now?
I'm senior advisor for Henry Yanez over here in the 10th. I tell you, after the last round of redistricting, for 10 years, all I heard from activists in Macomb County was, man, we got to get our own district. And I always said, be really careful what you wish for. And I mean, this district, it's May and I'm ready to pack it in over here.
Well, tell us about the field here, because we have Henry Yanez. We've got the former judge Marlinga, who is also running. Those two have the biggest names, but we've got Hueda, who's got a bunch of money, Hueda Arif, and we've also got the Warren City Commissioner, Angela Rogan.
You know, I've always pronounced it Rogan Sues, but then I've been corrected that she pronounces it Rogan C.
Rogan C. Okay, well, that's why I paused, because I wanted to see how you were going to answer how she pronounces it. So kind of give us the lay of the land here on the Democratic side.
Some people would... I mean, look, I've seen it in a couple of media outlets, you know, calling it a weak Democratic field. And I don't see that. I think this is for the most part a very strong Democratic field, at least on paper. you know, obviously where I fit in to the 10th, I could sit here and spend hours telling you why four of them aren't strong candidates. But I mean, look, you have every wing of the party represented. You know, yeah, everybody's been raising money. It's, you know, I'm anxiously keeping up with TV buys because I want to see who jumps first on that. But no, I mean, this is, you know, everybody with the exception of one, I think, you know, was born and raised here in Macomb County. You know, they get it. Everybody agrees on what the problems are. It's just very different approaches. You know, the Bernie Sanders wing of the party is obviously well represented here. You know, and then you've got your more moderate candidates. You know, I mean, Carl Marlinga has certainly had a bit of a political evolution on quite a few issues in the last 20, 25 years. So, yeah, I guess that's a really long, almost nonsensical way of saying it's a strong field of candidates.
Can the Bernie wing of the party take this district, though? I mean, it's a lot tighter partisan split than the 10th.
So I say no, not because of any professional obligation, but, you know, what I hear from people who are sort of in that space and have heard since 2016 is this myth that, you know, when people just hear our message, we win. And I always say, well, what were your thoughts on President Sanders' first term? Because plenty of people heard your message and you didn't win. Not to throw down a gauntlet here, but like, this is the part of the party that brought you, you know, defund the police.
That's not going to win there in Macomb County.
No, it's not. It's absolutely not. These are the people who, you know, their sons and daughters grow up to be police and firemen. These are the people who, when we have to fight a war, these are the people whose children get sent off to fight that war. It's not that that wing of the party doesn't have something to say that's of value. It's just, it doesn't connect for any number of reasons, mostly on, you know, when you start weighing into the culture wars. A lot of it just seems too radical to a lot of the voters out here.
Now, you're working with Henry Yanez. Is he going to be able to get the resources needed to push back and run a competitive campaign against John James, who's got seemingly endless resources and national contacts at the wazoo?
Look, nobody, if we're going to predict who can win this race by who can go dollar for dollar with John James, then we might as well not even have a primary. Nobody is going to raise the kind of money that John James is going to raise. 1.5 in that first quarter, that was just the start. But we've seen before a good campaign that can do what needs to be done can absolutely win. That's not to say that, you know, you win it with, you know, the 10 grand in your savings account and a bunch of friends knocking doors. But I mean, what it was, 2010. I mean, Mark Schauer had double what Wahlberg had. He still lost. You know, the money, we're very confident we'll have the resources. But, you know, like the thing with Henry, like, look, Henry's a blue collar guy with a blue collar donor list. You know, these are people who, you know, when Henry's doing his call time and he's asking for a contribution, we hear about inflation. You know, Henry doesn't belong to any country clubs full of rich lawyers. You know, Henry doesn't have this far-flung network of millionaires who he can just fly out to and they'll make sure he leaves with 50 grand. You know, but Henry's a worker. That's what Henry was in the state house. That's what he is as a councilman. You know, he's out knocking doors right now, for God's sake, because he wants to talk to some voters before he starts his call time. I mean, that's just, you know, we're good. We're really confident in the resources. Keep in mind, we're the only campaign in this race that has any labor support yet.
So with that, then, let's shift over across State Mile. Let's go to the 13th Congressional District. And in full disclosure, what are you doing with that campaign in that race right now?
I am sort of informally in Michael Griffey's orbit, but I will... I will end up running an independent expenditure for him too. We're okay. Just finalizing the details of that.
Now talk about that, because I understand that his name still hasn't really kind of reached the masses yet. And it seems like his main focus right now is to kick Adam Ollier off the ballot.
Now, because I'm in the frame, to run this independent expenditure, I haven't had any part of that. I've been pretty well, they built up a pretty solid wall, but, so I can't really speak much to what's being done as far as Ollier's ballot status. But I can tell you this, he's got an incredibly strong fundraising base that is incredibly responsive. I think, a primary this big, a district like that, there's no polling right now that really means much, because right now this is just all name ID. Once people start actually communicating with voters, I think you'll see the numbers move.
Well, is it all, you could say all campaigns are a certain amount of name ID. And in this case, Sharon McPhail has a lot of name ID. John Conyers III has a lot of name ID. So they would have to be taken seriously right out of the gate.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And, Detroit, like a lot of big cities, you don't necessarily have to be the biggest fundraiser to win these seats. Brenda and Rashida in 2018. Brenda Jones with what I think she raised all of $38,000, one, which was fine. It was by design. She was going to depend on her relationships in the community. But remember, she won the race to finish Conyers' term. And if there had only been one question on the ballot relating to that seat, who knows, Brenda could have won it. So, there is something to be said for name ID and relationships in the community. But you've also got Western Wayne County, and Western Wayne County is a lot more progressive than the city is on social issues. Mm. I learned that in 2020, running Victoria Burton Harris's race against Kim Worthy. Everything that we thought was really going to resonate in the city got no traction, but folks in Livonia were eating it up. So, but I think Michael's an incredibly strong candidate. I'm really impressed with him, and I'm not just saying that because, like I said, I'm in the orbit. I think that seat could really use somebody new with a fresh perspective.
All right. Well, thanks for the input, Chris Marchione. He is a political consultant out of Southeast Michigan. Appreciate you taking some time and breaking down some of these congressional districts with us here on the podcast.
Appreciate you having me, guys.
One of the things that we didn't bring up with Chris there is that he had been with the campaign with Huweda Araf, who is also running in that district. He's running with Henry Yanez now. It seems like Henry Yanez would be a better fit in that district, just the blue-collar nature of that district. And somebody with the Palestinian activist background as Huweda would probably be more better suited for maybe the Dearborn district or the 12th district or possibly Detroit.
The party based in that district is just not, it's not only it's going to work for him. I think you do need a blue collar candidate. I think you're right. Cass, I want to ask your reaction as a moderator. By the way, you did a great job of the debate. What was your takeaway?
Well, I was struck by a few things. One was how well behaved all the candidates were, in the sense that they all did a very good job of keeping to the time limits. We really didn't have to interrupt anybody. And they didn't go after each other directly. Garrett Saldano had that one line about answering James Craig's question because he wasn't there. And Mike Brown had that quip about the fish flopping around on the dock. But really, there wasn't any candidates going after one another. And there was an opportunity for that. We let them know in the pre-meeting that anybody who directly engaged in another candidate by name, that other candidate would get 30 seconds to respond. So that opportunity was available if they wanted to go down that road, but none of them did. And then, the questions that Megan Reckling, the chair of the Livingston County Republican Party, and I developed, we were really keeping an eye toward how do we distinguish these candidates among themselves? Like how can we get questions in where we know the answer is not going to be the same for everyone? And I thought we did pretty well on that. And I liked kind of the oddball questions like, would you fund, should the state university still receive state funding? Because I think that it's not necessarily about the funding itself. It's more about the mindset that they're approaching the job with. And what do they see as expendable as they're looking at the state budget? So I like some of the uniqueness there.
I was surprised the audience seemed very supportive of that concept of slashing state funding for the higher ed.
Yeah, I mean, it basically turns the University of Michigan and all these others into private institutions, which would just increase tuition even more. But, you know, I guess if you're not thinking along those lines, then you don't have a kid that you're going to push through college. Maybe it just doesn't matter as much. Now, Garrett Saldano told me after the debate that he felt like he won. Did you feel like anybody won that debate, John?
I did not. I thought a couple of people stood out. I think he stood out. I think Ryan Kelly stood out. I think Markey did okay. I think Perry did okay. I don't think anybody, I couldn't walk away saying that was a clear winner. I think a lot of people did well, and I don't think anybody hurt themselves.
I wonder if James Craig is going to end up being on any debate stage. He has not committed to the one in Northern Michigan yet in Traverse City. Obviously, the Detroit Chamber event is going to be coming in a couple weeks. And by that point, he may not even be on the ballot, John.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for them, the folks that are arranging the Detroit Chamber debate. That could really get scrambled 2 days, 3 days before the event is set to begin with that canvassers meeting scheduled the way it is.
Yeah, and I understand why they did what they did as far as like polling and bringing in candidates that they thought were actually going to be relevant. And it makes a lot of sense in a normal year, but this is not a normal year at all, John.
No. And if you look at the polling, there's such a huge percent of the population that's undecided, even the party population undecided about these candidates. I really think you ought to put everybody up on stage who is going to make the ballot.
Yeah, and that's why we did it that way, is because you just don't know what's going to happen in, as far as the petition signatures. And if you get three people kicked off, you know, does Mike Brown now have an opportunity to shine?
Yeah.
I mean, Tudor Dixon, maybe she survives, and then maybe she gets a lot of that James Craig vote. You'd hate to exclude people at this point.
Certainly, if Dixon's off, if Craig's off, if Perry Johnson can't make it on the ballot, it's really wide open.
Yeah, you get Kevin Rinke, you got Garrett Saldano, and it seems like all these other candidates should get an opportunity. But we'll see. We'll see if they change the rules at all. But as of now, I'm just telling you that our mindset was that we want to give everybody a little bit of exposure and let the voters start experiencing them a little bit more, listening to their message. And then at that point, I think there will be a natural weeding out at a certain point as far as who's going to be able to get support and who's not.
It's going to be a fun process to watch.
I'd like to thank AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. So I'd also like to thank our producer who is helping put this together, Mark Bayshore, for taking care of the audio levels and everything else. Samantha Schreiber for joining us a little earlier, Garrett Saldano, Chris Marconi, and for the boss, John Rurink, I'm Kyle Malin. Until next week, take care.